Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of the Arcade Repair Tips Question and Answer Podcast. My name is Jonathan Leung, the producer, director, and editor of the Arcade Repair Tips video series. And joining me today is Mr. Arcade Repair Tips himself, Tim Peterson. How are you doing, Tim?
I'm doing great, Jonathan.
Good. Well, it's good to hear that, Tim. Also, I want to mention that we have a special guest with us tonight. You might know him from such videos as Troubleshooting Monitors with Michael and More Troubleshooting Monitors with Michael, as well as Installing a Cap Kit. We have Mr. Michael with us. Michael, how are you doing today?
I'm good, guys. How are y'all?
Good. Now, we have Michael on the phone, so he's not going to be as clear as me and Tim, who are here in the quote-unquote studio, but we're still glad to have Michael with us, and hopefully he can help us answer some of these questions you guys have sent in. And we've been overwhelmed with the amount of questions we got this time. I mean, golly, this is probably the most we've had for any one podcast. So, you know, thank you guys for sending them in. We love to answer them. It's really fun. You know, without much ado, let's go ahead and get started. And first, we'll go over our responses from the last show. Now, you might remember that we had mentioned something about a Captain's Auction Warehouse on the last podcast. They're an auction site that deals in arcade games. And we had a guy email us named Christopher Houghton. And he actually gave us some positive feedback, and I just wanted to mention this on the podcast. He says, not many people are using new technology available, like YouTube, podcasts, and blogs, for the arcade industry. You take great pride in your work, and it shows. I will be linking to you guys from our blog and referring your videos as often as possible. Thank you for your link in your website and your shout-out on the podcast. Well, Christopher, we're really glad to hear that you enjoy the podcast and that, you know, we do feel like we take better advantage of the technology than you know, a lot of the arcade resources that are out there right now. So we really appreciate that kind of feedback.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Jonathan at this point. You know, that's what a lot of he brings to the table. A lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff you guys don't know. If it's up to me, we'd still be shooting on VHS tapes or something else. So thanks, Jonathan.
Yeah, so we really try to use the technology to its fullest. YouTube is a great tool for being able to teach people, and we feel like it's a great tool for our trade. So we're glad that you enjoy them, Christopher, and you know, stay tuned and watch for more videos. Now let's move on to some questions now. We had one from Sunkissed Shark last time. He had a couple, but this time he actually approaches us with a different question, but I went ahead and put in the responses anyway. He's trying to hook up a JAMA board to a VGA monitor, and he says, I've been stuck for 2 weeks now. I have had the JAMA board hooked to the board, and I have the video connected to the converter and the monitor connector to it as well, and I get no signal on the screen. I've hooked a DVD player to the converter, and I do get the picture, so the converter itself is functional. So I figure there is something wrong in the JAMA harness itself, but I'm not sure where. Any ideas? Now, I was actually able to be online when Sunkissed Shark, also known as Alex, his real name was Alex, I found that out later, emailed this in, and I actually walked him through a couple of steps. Now, Tim, if you didn't know any better, what would you say just right off the bat this problem was?
Well, anytime you're not getting a video like that, you're no signal on the screen. We're looking for a power supply issue.
Yeah, and that's what I told him, you know, and he said he sent me some pictures and said that he had bought a power supply with a digital readout. He said that digital readout was reading at 4, and, you know, typically that's not correct. You know, you want those digital readouts, they typically show the 5-volt line of the power supply. And so what I told him was crank it up to 5 volts, and when he did that, he got the picture and sound, but he's still having a couple of problems with some vertical kind of lines on his board, on his screen from his board. And I just happen to know that he is plugging up an X-Men versus Street Fighter board. And these CPS2 boards, as they call them, X-Men versus Street Fighter and Marvel versus Capcom all fall into this category. These boards, you know, have an A board and a B board. And so I told him to turn the game off, press really hard against the board to make sure that they're making a good connection, and then to turn it back on. And when he did that, he got it working. I was really happy to help him right there on the spot. His response to all this was, you, sir, are a genius. I don't know about a genius, but, you know, we're glad we can help you in any way we can. But he says, thank you so much for your help. I have to wire up the coin door and the ground and the kick buttons, and then it's done. If I run into any other problems, I'll check with you guys first. Well, we appreciate that. You know, we really like helping you guys out any way we can.
Yeah. One comment on the genius thing is, our goal was never to show. We don't ever want to be like we're the arcade gods or something, or we know more than everybody. The truth is, we probably don't know as much as a lot of people out there, but that's what we've learned, is that you don't have to be a genius to do these game fixes and stuff. And if we can do it, you can do it too. That's what we want to keep encouraging you guys to try and to work on your games. Don't be afraid.
Yeah, I think a lot of people try to overcomplicate a lot of these problems and issues that are happening. So, you know,
Michael's a genius.
That's right. Michael's the genius that we have here. So he's the one that helps us out with most of our, you know, electronics issues, you know, the major ones anyway. So we'll give a plug to Michael since he's here. But You know, but that was, you know, it was, that was just pretty much a simple fix from our end. But, you know, for Alex, that was a big deal to him. He'd been working 2 weeks on that same problem. So, you know, that's why we like to help you out in any way we can. So, you know, let us know if you guys have, need any help or have any questions. So, but we'll go ahead and move on. You guys who are longtime listeners to the show, I don't know how long time you can be considering we've only had three episodes, but who are longtime listeners of the show, quote unquote, might
hardcore
remember
fans right there.
That's right, the hardcore. Might remember Rejected Maniac. He had emailed us about a flicker problem he had in the bottom corner of his screen, and he took a YouTube video of it. Last time he had it on private. This time we got to see it, but the problem is that with YouTube, when you take video of a monitor, all you see is just flickering all over, and it was really hard for us to tell what was going on. Michael might have a good opinion on this, though. Michael, Rejected Maniac, when he wrote in, he said there was a little light flicker in the bottom left-hand corner of his screen, and he couldn't figure out what was going on. Are there any ideas that you might have that might cause this type of issue?
Is it just in the corner of the screen, Jonathan?
Yeah, he said just in the left-hand corner. I didn't put it on the outline here, but he said just in the left-hand corner.
Yeah, it's something I'd have to see also. Caps are always a good place to start.
Yeah, I think that's the consensus me and Tim kind of reached, was that a cap kit would probably be a good start, but I'm not so sure if it's a cap or not. Do you have any other ideas what this might be, Michael? Any ideas?
Unless the high voltage is arcing someplace, it will cause, it's not actually arcing to the ground to stop the monitor, but maybe like a high voltage cap breaking down, causing it to flicker. I have seen that in the past.
Okay.
But again, I'll take another look at the video and see if I can come up with something.
Yeah, and you know, you can see the video. Actually, I'll put it in our favorites on the Varcade Games YouTube page so everybody can see it in case anybody out there has an idea of what might be causing this issue. So, you know, I mean, definitely we want to, you know, help him get it resolved, but he's been really trying to work out this problem and everything, so hopefully we can get that resolved. Tim, do you have any extra thoughts on this while we're talking about it?
No, just like you said, we'll put the video up there. This is a community of all of us are trying to get those games fixed, so if anybody has an idea after they see it, I think Michael's right, though. Usually that flickering, that's a good sign of one of those voltage caps like that, huh, Mike?
Yeah, that sounds good to me. Well, I think it's at least a good place for him to start is with a cap kit, and he can kind of go from there and see where he ends up. So try that out, Rejected Maniac, and give us your thoughts back and let us know. On an off topic, though, he did also send us some pictures of the cabinet restoration that he had been doing on his Mortal Kombat 2, and they looked really good.
Yeah.
So good job, definitely.
He does order a cap kit, and it doesn't. There's a lot of caps around the flyback itself that isn't included in a normal cap kit.
Right.
And if there's a way, he has a way to test those, that's probably where I'd start after a cap kit.
Yeah, Michael, when you mentioned the high voltage caps, can you expound on that and tell him that's what you're talking about, those caps that are in that area, right?
Right. The caps that are in the actual horizontal high voltage section is going to be right around the flyback, maybe a timing cap, something like that. There's a lot of electrolytics there that's usually not included in a regular cap kit, and they might be breaking down. It's a common failure because of the heat from the transformer. So
right. It could be a tiny cap too, right? Don't always think the biggest caps, right?
Right, but usually the smaller ones, they wear out quicker than the bigger ones. So yeah, I always check the small ones.
I know that's one thing you've taught me. Those 100 mics are real common about going out, right?
Right.
Okay, well, I mean, I think that's a great place for him to start, you know, checking around the flyback and everything, making sure all the caps around that area look pretty good. So, okay, well, we'll go ahead and move on to one of our other responses from the last show. You guys might remember I mentioned Alejandro Anivas, which he actually said I said his name correctly, so I was kind of proud of myself about that. But he says, this time, thanks for mentioning my color issue on your podcast. I appreciate it. And a great job on the pronunciation. I want to update you and your listeners to my progress so far. I've taken your advice, of course, and replaced the 4A and 7F chips, but unfortunately the colors have not changed. I sent in my board for repairs and was told that my 6F had been rewired at some point, since some of the legs had been broken. I also have a few swollen and dry capacitors, which were also replaced. Unfortunately, the technician could not find any color issues with the board and reported no issues with the game when it was tested before returning it to me. I finally got it back, and once again the colors were still wrong. I'm not sure what to check next. Any guidance would be great. I appreciate all your help so far, and I love your podcast. Keep them coming. Thanks again. So, last time, Tim, you might remember, we told Alejandro that he should replace a couple of the chips on his Pac-Man board, a 4A and a 7F. He says he's done it this time. He's still having color problems, but it sounds like he had it tested by a technician, and it was working fine. So now I'm starting to think monitor problem.
Yeah, it's starting to sound that way. Do you remember this guy, Michael? Didn't he say, Jonathan, that some of the colors were just opposite?
Yeah, I think he did. Something to that effect. So, but he's having, I mean, obviously, like we said, now it sounds like more of a monitor issue than a board issue. Michael, anything that might cause these type of color alterations?
Well, one thing I'd like to say, another guy had I think it was a Capcom Bowen game.
Yeah, Michael Varcade.
The colors were reversed or something.
Uh-huh.
Right. A lot of guys get the misconception that you got to understand you got to have all three colors to make all of your colors. So if you're missing one color, you will still get some colors, but not all the colors. And a lot of guys think that the colors are swapped or, you know, instead of having white, you'd have yellow. Well, it's actually because you're missing a color. So your colors are actually right. It's just something in your monitor. You know, you're missing a color, if that makes any sense.
Right.
So if, you know, if you have, you know, something that's yellow, then it needs to be white. It might not necessarily be a wiring problem. You just might be missing a color, like your red or your blue is not working at all in your monitor.
Also, the tube itself, if it has a short in one color, right, would do that.
Right.
So
I've seen, you know, if a monitor has no blue at all, none of your brighter colors will look right, like your white will be yellow. I think that in that Bowling game, that's what he was saying, his white was yellow. So that's not necessarily he's getting a yellow signal there, it's just he's missing the blue to make the white.
Right, and that makes sense. I mean, definitely.
So, what are we going to recommend, Michael, that he check the transistors on his neck board?
If he's getting all the colors at one point in time, he sees red, green, and blue. That's your standard colors. If on the game he sees those, if he can see the colors, he knows they're there, then he might have a wiring problem.
Probably, but he could go into a test mode and bring up the color bars too, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that would probably be a recommended way to make sure that all of his colors were working correctly, I would think. Go into that test mode and see if he can get all the colors to come up. Now, Pac-Man does have a test mode, correct, for coloring?
Pretty sure.
Pretty sure? Okay.
Yeah, you go flip the switch inside your game, the black switch over, and it'll go through some tests and push the red button.
Okay.
You can also, on the neck of board, if you're looking at the back of it, around the pins that go on the tube, usually see they're usually labeled. I'm not sure if some of the older arcades are, but usually they're labeled. You'll have heater and ground, and you'll have the actual, I have a B, red, and green next to the red, green, and blue pins. You can actually take a wire to ground and momentarily touch it, and it'll bring up a bright green or blue or whichever pin you're touching. And that'll give you an idea if it's the tube itself or something on the board that's causing it not to work.
Yeah, even if you had a bad potentiometer in it, that's what you're basically doing, right, is cranking.
Right.
So it would even tell you if it was a bad potentiometer in that instance too, right?
Correct. Because your potentiometer is actually going to ground. It's controlling how much, you know, the resistance to ground. So if you just put a wire straight to ground, it'll just have it full strength, and you'll have a bright green with retrace through it. And you don't want to hold it there too long, but it'll give you an idea if the green gun is good on the tube, or okay, the blue, and so on.
I think that definitely gives Alejandro some things to try, at least, and see if that might be causing the issue that he's having with his Pac-Man board. So, yeah, try those out, Alejandro, and then, you know, give us some feedback. Let us know if that helps you out. You know, I think we've eliminated the board issue at this point, so definitely time to start looking at that monitor. Okay, we'll go ahead and move on to, I think, our last response from the last show. You guys might remember Arthur. He was our only voicemail caller. And he had emailed in about a Neo Geo board he was having some issues with, and we'd recommended some things, but we really thought this was more of a board issue. Well, believe it or not, we actually called up Arthur last night, and we got to talk to him for a little bit. And he did send us some pictures of his monitor chassis, but he said some things that really led me and Tim to think that it was still very much a board issue that he was having. For one, he said that there were some diamond-type blocks or pixelation around the characters in the game, and some square blocks in the game. Monitors just don't cause these type of sprite issues, do they, Michael?
No, that's more like a board issue.
Yeah, and that's what me and Tim were both thinking. You know, we really thought that was going to be the case, and we told him to try, you know, a couple of things. You know, we told him to clean, of course, his cartridges, because the Neo Geo is like a cartridge-based system, much like the NES. Jerry, last time, I believe, went into some details about how to clean cartridges, make sure you blow in them and do some things. And we also talked about the cartridge headers, you know, where you plug the cartridges in, making sure that those pins are all making a good connection, and checking some chips on the board, just kind of pressing them down, making sure they're doing a good connection. Now, Michael, if he does have some problems in his board, I'm not real familiar, and you might not be real familiar with even Neo Geo boards, but on a board like this with sprite issues like this, is there anything that you could tell him, you know, anywhere to check or anything that might be causing this? I mean, you know, what's going on? Do you know?
Like Jerry was saying, it's close to the Nintendo, the first Nintendo boards, and they have the socket that the game plugs in, the little metal pins inside there. You need to make sure they're all there, they're not bent in or broke. I have fixed a couple of those like that. Okay. And usually you can take a small paper clip or something real small and dig in there and pull the pins out if they're pushed back too far.
That sounds good. Tim, do you have any extra thoughts on this before we move on?
No, I think that's
okay, well, Arthur, you know, we talked to you on the phone. Hopefully, a little bit more detail here. Maybe that'll give you a little bit more to try on your board to see if you can't get it working. Let's go ahead and move on to the YouTube questions this week. We don't have nearly as many as we've had in the last couple of weeks, but we'll go ahead and answer the two that we have from YouTube. We have one from Noobs Pro, and he asked, this is on our cleaning a pinball machine question and answer video that we did. And he asked, I wonder if you could play a pinball machine without the glass. Well, yes, you can, and we've done it before. Tim, what happens when you play a pinball machine without the glass?
You can get your teeth knocked out. No, it's very noisy. El Presidente Jerry shaking his head. It's twice the sound. You would not believe how noisy it is. But it is dangerous also. That pinball will flip around. I mean, it's liable to jump out. There's definitely a reason there's a piece of glass there. Also, if we never have mentioned this before, guys, if you need to replace pinball glass, always make sure that you get tempered glass. That's the kind that you see in car windshields. It cracks instead of breaks. You would never want a kid or somebody to stand on your pinball game and it not be tempered and shatter instead of, you know, breaking and cutting their leg or something.
And that's really good advice, Tim. You definitely want to get the tempered glass for your pinball machines. It costs a little extra, I believe, but it's definitely worth the price that you're going to pay.
A pool ball will definitely make you wish you had tempered glass, too, if you hit one over there.
Yeah. So, Noobs Pro, yes, you can play a pinball machine without the glass, but you really wouldn't want to, I think, is our decision.
You got glass on your pinball game, Michael?
Yeah, I got glass on all of them.
Have you ever played them without the glass?
They are very noisy. Very, very noisy. The flippers are insane noisy.
Yeah, and, you know, that's something that Tim mentioned. That's true. The flippers are really noisy. I forgot about that. You know, we didn't talk about that, but that's true. So, and those, especially the pop bumpers and,
right.
You know, some of the stuff like that, very noisy. So definitely want to play with glass on if you have an option. You know, and, of course, that pinball. Every time that pinball hits the glass, you've probably seen it before. You hit a flipper and the pinball hits the glass. That thing could be flying right at your head if that glass wasn't there. So, you know, definitely also a safety issue as well. So, you know, don't go put one out on route without glass, I would say.
For sure.
Okay.
I've got some high scores, though, with a pinball game without glass on
it. I bet you can. You just keep putting it in the, you know, in the ramps and everything like that, right?
Yeah, my son likes playing and cheating.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Playing and cheating, right? So, okay, well, Noobs Pro, there's the answer to your question. And now we're going to move on to Fiat Bravo Driver. I guess that's how you say that. Is that the thing? Yeah, Fiat Bravo Driver. I hope that's right. I hope, you know, I got it all there. But he says, hi, great video. If you have to replace wires to the arcade to an arcade push button, what type of wire would you use? Tim, what type of wire would you use to replace, you know, the wiring to an arcade push button?
Well, Michael, correct me here. I think it's an 18 to 20 gauge wire is pretty common in those. You don't want to use too thick a wire or too thin a wire.
That sounds right, and I always use a braided wire instead of solid wire.
Exactly. Right. You want that. And if you're not quite sure what we're talking about, you guys that have stripped wire before, the solid wire actually looks like it. That's what we're talking about. It is very solid. A lot of times, like copper wire or something, will be solid like that. But the braids will be the kind that you always see us in the videos. We'll be twisting it before we put it into something. So you want to use braided wire. That's why we go to auctions and buy lots of other games. We rarely buy new wire. You can go get some at Radio Shack if you had to. But usually, if you wire up a game like JAMA or something, it always comes with 10 feet of wire, and you only need a few feet of it, so you always end up with extra wire. So I'll give a shout-out to JAMA Boards or somebody like that sells jam harness, you ought to have two or three of them laying around that gives you some extra wire, too.
Yeah, especially you guys that have the newer style games like the Street Fighters, the Neo Geos and stuff. Definitely handy to have a couple of jam harness around. You know, they don't cost very much, and, you know, it really helps you out when you're trying to wire a game up.
It's cheaper to buy a jam harness with all those wires than sometimes just to go buy the wires.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's something to think about. You know, order you a couple. You know, if you think about ordering one, just go ahead and order you, like, two or three, and make sure you have a couple on hand.
So if you buy it from JammaBoards.com and get a Jamma harness, that is going to be the size wire you need.
Right. So there you go. I hope that answers your question there, Fiat Bravo driver. So we're going to go ahead and move on to our website questions. Now, we start off with a couple of voicemails. So apparently Arthur started a little trend here, Tim. We're getting some voicemails now. The first one is from Robert Roy, and he has a question about a Geo7 monitor. So we'll go ahead and listen to that now.
Hi, guys. My name is Robert Roy. I live in New Hampshire. I have a G07 hooked up to an isolation transformer that has no raster. I can hear the power come on, but there is no crackle that comes on or no glow from the neck of the monitor. I have verified that the F09 and F02 fuses are working correctly. I also believe I've tested the bridge rectifier or the diodes for the power supply, that they are working correctly. I'm getting high voltage at the 220, 25 watt power supply ceramic resistor. I also have a flow chart from Randy Fromm that I've been using, and in there it suggests removing the X701 transistor and retesting with my meter. I get a very high reading, well over 160, closer up to 280. I look on the board, I don't see any visible cracks or any solder joints. I've also tested the metal chassis on X01 and got almost 300 volts there. I've recapped this thing, new flyback, new SD870 with hot, but with the super flyback kit that Bob Roberts sells. I've also replaced the IC501 and X501 transistor. I am able to note that I can discharge the monitor, so there is some high power getting to the monitor. Don't know if the monitor is bad or if there's something else that I can check. Thanks for your help.
Okay, well, Robert, it looks like you're having some trouble with a Geo7 monitor. You know, maybe we'll go to Michael with this one first. Michael's our resident monitor repair guy. You know, after listening to what Robert has to say here, what do you think the problem is here, Michael?
Well, I'm guessing before he replaced all the parts, he's saying some of the fuses were blown. I don't have a schematic of that monitor out in front of me, but if it has a regulator, which is usually a 5 or 7-pin chip on a heat sink, I didn't see that he replaced that. That would be my number one guess, if this particular model has that.
Okay. So you're saying a regulator right there, huh?
Right. And it's going to be right there in the power supply.
Okay.
If it doesn't, more than likely when those fuse blew, there was a standoff resistor or maybe just a little power resistor in line, and I'm sure it's probably going to be open. It's probably going to your B+. That's probably why he's not hearing the high voltage come up.
Gotcha. Yeah, it sounds like he's getting at least something to the tube, though. I did notice that. I think he said something about, you know, like he can pop it, and he does get the pop. So he's at least getting something up there, but, you know.
Right. Says he doesn't hear the crackle.
Yeah, it says he don't hear the crackle. That's going to be the high voltage I'm sure he's talking about.
Gotcha.
And at the neck, he don't have any neck glow.
Gotcha.
So what I would do is he said he replaced the, I don't remember if he didn't replace the hot. I know he said he replaced the flyback, but if he didn't replace the hot, we need to check it. But if it is good, he needs to check the voltage at the collector of the hot and make sure you got B+ there.
Okay. Well, that sounds like good advice. You know, definitely at least a starting point for Rob to try out and see what he thinks. So, Tim, you have anything to add to what Michael said on this one?
No. I noticed that he talked about being interactive. So, Rob, give us some feedback on that. If we have to get on the phone, pull a Geo7 out, maybe I can walk you through some of that. If you're having any issues, let me know.
Sounds good. Well, Robert, try out some of the stuff that Michael and Tim have talked about and let us know how it goes for you. So we'd love to hear back from you and maybe even get you on the phone and see if we can help you out that way too. So now we're going to move on to Jack, our second voicemail of the podcast. So here we go. Here's Jack.
Yes, my name is Jack. I acquired a Tekken 2 machine. I plugged it in, and you hear a humming, but nothing turns on. It's like the board doesn't light up, the monitor doesn't do anything. And I don't know anything about these. Maybe you can give me a heads up on what I need to check, what I need to do, what I need to buy, whatever. I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, so Jack, it sounds like he's having some problems with a Tekken 2 game. You know, I mean, golly, where do you start on this one, Tim?
Well, you know, we always ask the question, will it play blind? Well, in this instance, I don't think it's playing blind. He says he hears a hum, and but no picture or sound. So, sure would be interesting. He can check for his voltage, make sure that he is getting... I know one thing you've taught me, Michael, is that he can turn up the brightness on his monitor.
Right.
And see if he actually has power, you know, something going up to that monitor, right?
Right. Even if the board is bad and the monitor is working, he can turn the brightness up and he'll get retraced or a white screen or something.
Yeah. So.
But I have seen this before where he's talking about the hum with nothing else. I have seen two different things. Usually I've seen the power supply. I know you probably work on a lot more power supplies than I have, but I've seen it not putting out the right voltage, and also a board.
Exactly.
The hum is coming from the sound. If the hum's coming from the speakers, that's usually a board.
Yeah, you got. I've seen fuse holders cause that, but 9 times out of 10, first thing we're going to recommend: check your voltages. Check your voltage on that power supply.
And, Jack, we have a great video on the website about checking and replacing a power supply that we would highly recommend you check out. That sounds like the one you need to start with, just to make sure that you're getting the correct power up to your board. Because I think Tim and Michael are both right in this case. I think you're having maybe a couple power issues or maybe even a board issue. So before you go suspecting the board, though, definitely check the power supply and see if there's not anything going on there. Make sure it's giving out correct voltage and everything. Check out our video on checking and replacing a power supply. So, Jack, we thank you for emailing in that question. Hopefully that leads you at least in a direction that you can go with your problem. So now we're going to move on to Tim Faustini. Okay, and Tim writes, last May I stumbled across a cabinet in the trash. Wow. Golly, we don't get many of those. We might get it in, like, I remember that half-sawed Miss Pac-Man. That might be the last one we got out of the trash.
Well, actually, I got that out of the guy that was using it for a rocking chair. We'll save that story for another day.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I'm glad Jerry was with me that day.
There you go. But anyway, he says, last night I stumbled across a cabinet in the trash. It was a Marvel vs. Capcom CPS2 board inside a Street Fighter II Championship Edition cabinet. I thought I had died and went to Geek Heaven. Either way, my initial novice diagnosis found that the power supply was shot, and I am not able to see what sort of shape the board is in. The tube was also in bad shape, but before I had a chance to figure out if it would work, my father threw it out along with the physical cabinet. The wood was rotting. So currently I have the controls, the CPS2 board, and the jammer harness. Either way, I was scouring through the internet for any and all resources regarding arcade cabinet repair and found your blog via Twitter. And any and all assistance is welcome. Thank you. So, Tim, man, you hit the jackpot here, dude. It sounds like you got a good deal. Now, here's the only problem is that some of your stuff might not be working. Tim, what are some things that we can do to try to check that board to make sure it might be working?
Well, one thing that you can do, let's say you don't have a monitor or anything, but if you can always hook up a speaker to the speaker wires, and then you can take the ground wire and the start button and jumper. You know, a good sign of a working game is always when you hear sound. So, you know, if you're getting sound, that'll at least help if you're getting, you know, humming and mumbles and stuff like that. But if you're getting good sound, that's a good indicator sometimes. Without a monitor to check it on, you don't have a lot to do.
Right, and without having to buy a monitor. I mean, you know, you could always get the same board that, you know, Sunkist Shark had. That board that converts a JAMA to a VGA monitor.
Right.
You could always use that board, but that board's kind of expensive, and you probably want an arcade monitor if you're going to build an arcade game out of it.
Right.
So, you know, for now, you know, why not at least see if the board's working? Now, again, Marvel vs. Capcom 2, Marvel vs. Capcom 1 is a CPS2 board, just like the X-Men vs. Street Fighter we were talking about earlier. And if you're not getting any sound after you hook up that power supply and everything, your board may have gone suicide. And this happens to CPS2 boards when they lose power. The ROMs on the CPS2 board are encrypted, which means when the board is powered on, it decrypts them. And it has a decryption key that it keeps on a on the board in a little 5-volt battery or something like that, that keeps that encryption key valid. Well, if that battery on the board loses power, goes out, the encryption key is gone, and the board will actually suicide. And I'm probably not describing it exactly correct, but that's basically what happens. And when this happens, the board is basically dead at this point. There are some people who have had success reviving them, but it's a very difficult process. So if this has happened to your CPS2 board, it might be better just to get a new one. But at least you can test to see, you know, if you're getting sound or anything like that and see how it goes for you.
He's definitely going to have another cabinet eventually. So I would go to auctions or put an ad in the paper or whatever you got to do. Ask the local operators in your area, do they have an old cabinet? Sometimes they give you one. Heck, we got a couple. Probably if you lived in our area, we'd give you just to come get and haul off. But anyway, if you get another cabinet, as long as it's JAMA, at least you could test it in it. Or, you know, I would highly recommend getting another game.
Oh yeah. I mean, definitely want to get another game. I mean, it's always good to have a game around. But at least, you know, we've given you some stuff to start off on. So you know, keep us posted and let us know, Tim, if there's anything that we can do for you. So. Sounds like you did hit the jackpot, though. I mean, either way, even if it works or doesn't work, it's not like you spend a dime on it. So,
right.
Okay, Michael, do you have anything to add on that? I mean, anything that, you know, without a monitor, is there any good way to test a board?
No, I think y'all covered it. You guys always help me out with my test rig, so.
Okay. Yeah, and Michael actually has one of our test rigs that we've had, and, you know, basically you can hook up a JAMA board directly to it, and it's got a power supply, it's got a speaker to it, it even has monitor cables, so you can hook it directly up to a monitor. And these type of test rigs really help out when you're testing boards, making sure they work. Also, Tim, you know, Tim is advertised the fact that we do the board checking service for you guys. If you pay shipping both ways, we will plug your game up into one of our cabinets and make sure it's working for you. So if you, let's say you hook it all up and you're not getting sound, but you don't think it's suicided yet, you know, you might think about sending it to us, pay shipping both ways to us. It's a free service that we offer, and we can test it out for you and see if it's working. So, Tim, that's at least a place to start. And, you know, just keep us posted and let us know how it goes from there. So let's move on to Robin. Okay, Robin says, I purchased a Space Duel. This is a little throwback here. Space Duel game. And at the time, it had a small white dot in the middle of the monitor screen. Within a few months, the white dot is now the origin for lines that go to all objects floating on the screen. Vector lines, ? My question is there an adjustment I can make to the monitor to fix the problem, or is this a result of another issue? The game still plays, the color is great, and the sound is great. The only issue is the annoying lines. Thanks in advance. So, Tim, I'll throw this one to you. What does this sound like to you?
Michael, what she's talking about here, Space Duel is a vector game, kind of like Asteroids. And yes, there are some pots on that. There's some adjustments that can be done. Probably there's all those voltage regulators on there. But since it's working and looks good, I'm scratching my brain. But I do remember that we might have to do a little research before you ask one of my vector monitor buddies. Because I'm pretty sure that, yeah, there's some adjustments that can take out. Sometimes just turning the brightness a little darker, you know, or down, I guess you would say, can help that. Have you worked on many vector games before, Michael?
I have worked on a few Tempest.
That's
You're right about
monitor.
The brightness. I do recall those vector monitors will bleed real easy if the brightness is up too high. You might actually even try the brightness on the flyback if it's the screen or the brightness won't work by itself. But I'm not real experienced with those. I got some tips in the archives. I'd have to look that up.
Yeah. Robin, let's start there. You know, the flyback is that suction cup thing. You follow it back down. There's usually two, sometimes three knobs on there. One will be focus, the other will be brightness. Try to turn your brightness down a little. A lot of people don't like that picture, but in your case with those vector lines, it might help you. And if that doesn't, let us know. And we definitely got some buddies that are a little more qualified on that era of game that we can ask and find the answer out for you.
Yeah, Victor games, you know, were real popular there for a while, like Tempest, and and others, you know, Space Duel, for instance. And you know, we had a Star Castle one time. You remember the Star Castle? You know, all good games, but, you know, a little bit more difficult to work on those monitors versus a normal roster monitor, however you say it.
Actually, people who work on them say they're easier, but our era, what I grew up in, is usually that RGB monitor and what we focused on a lot.
Sure. So, Robin, you know, at least I think we've given you at least a couple of things to try out. You know, try those out, and if you have any other questions, give us an email or call us on the voicemail line, and we'll go from there. So, okay, Robin, let's move on. After answering yours, let's go ahead and move on to Brad now. Brad says, I have a Sega Gremlin Frogger cocktail game that I'm putting a 60-in-1 board in. The game is having monitor issues. Somehow the colors are not showing up correctly, and the graphics are not sharp. Pixels are missing in the menu screen of the multi-game. Also, only in the menu screen, I get a weird vertical white line where it should be black. I can't seem to dial in the correct colors, i.e. pinky always stays white in Ms. Pac-Man, and I can't get the logs in Frogger to turn to a brown color. The 60-in-1 board works fine if I hook it up to a computer monitor via the VGA port. And he actually sent us a little video to show us what it's looking like, and then he says thanks. So, Brad, we've actually had this problem before, and it wasn't any kind of adjustment or anything we did. And I'm just going to throw this out as kind of a random thing first before Tim and Michael get to the more serious things. But, you know, Tim's Garage, we will work on cocktail cabinets in Tim's Garage, and the colors will be crazy. And, Tim, why is that?
Well, you know, you have the rebar, and I have a concrete floor. And a lot of that has to do with the way the rebar is. It messes up. They get magnetized or something. Michael, you might expound on the technical side of that. All I know is I get some really funky colors turn the game a different direction, especially on cocktails. Reverse your poles, in other words. Or I'd like to know if that's your situation, if you have a concrete floor or something, or what do you think, Mike?
I've never run across that as far as where it's sitting. I have, you know, if you have speakers or some other type of stuff, I've seen it, you know, where it needs to be degaussed.
Right.
But I've never actually seen the color switch like that.
Yeah.
But when he's talking about the ghost is white and the logs won't turn brown, I mean, it sounds to me that he's missing red. It's kind of like what I was saying earlier.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is definitely going to be a monitor issue, but more than likely, like I said earlier, I'd probably make sure the tube was right by shorting out the pins and making sure the tube is good and then start with the board, especially if it's the original monitor.
Yeah, and it sounds like this might actually be the original monitor, Michael. I think that's a great idea. But, yeah, me and Tim have worked on several cocktail cabinets, and every time we work on one, the colors are all screwy unless we turn it just the right way, and then they'll come in fine. And it's just something about being in Tim's Garage. We worked on one for Pinball Festival one year, and we got it, you know, we got it, and we're like, it still looks bad. And we took it up to Pinball Festival, it looked perfect. I mean, we couldn't have made it any better. And we started filling around in Tim's Garage, turning the cocktail cabinet, and we found that if we turned it certain ways, that the colors would come in good. And
that's crazy. Yeah, I've never seen that.
If they're missing the red, what does
that's what it sounds like, with the ghost being white when it should be red. In a log, you know, it's gonna take red to make the brown.
Right.
That's what it sounds like to me.
Okay.
I agree.
Either the red is weak or it's done. It's not there at all.
That sounds good. So, I mean, I think you know, you described it pretty well, Michael. I think hopefully that'll give Brad at least a starting point, short out those pins, and see if his tube is good and everything like that. And you know, and then he can report back to us about any other issues or if he continues to have the same issue. You know,
I did not see the video yet, Brad, so I'll check it out too.
Michael, did you get to see the video?
Yeah, these videos are kind of hard because you get the raster, the scrolling of the tube.
Yeah.
So, but that's what it looks like from what I can tell off the video. Something to do with the colors are just crazy, and I would definitely check the tube, especially like I said, especially if it's the original one. I'd check, make sure the colors are strong.
Sure. Well, we'll let Brad kind of, you know, think about that and try out some things and see what he comes up with and report back to us if he has any other questions. So, Brad, we hope that at least gets you started, and now we'll move on to Kyle. And Kyle says, on the left side of my Street Fighter II upright, I have vertical lines of discoloration. It's not too annoying once you start playing, but I want to put it in my office, and I want it to look good. Someone said it needed a new gas in it. I didn't quite understand that. I've adjusted color settings and things, but I can't get the vertical lines to go away. They're about 1 inch wide and are just as colored lighter than the rest of the screen. Thank you for any advice. So it sounds like he's having some discoloration. I don't know what's up with the new gas in it, though. That's a little crazy.
I think the gas is probably good.
We use super unleaded. Nothing high octane.
I think this is turning into car talk all of a sudden. sorry, we don't mean to laugh at you, Kyle.
Well,
you know, it's just kind of funny.
Talking about the phosphor or whatever up inside of his tube.
Sure, sure.
That kind of gas. But definitely sounds like a cap issue to me, Michael.
Oh, definitely. He says they go down the side of the game, correct?
Correct, yeah. He says...
Is it a sideways monitor? Is it going to be a vertical?
Yeah, Street Fighter 2 is a horizontally mounted monitor, typically. So, right. So you say vertical lines...
If it's a horizontal and the lines are on the side, it's going to be in the horizontal section.
Gotcha.
And it's definitely going to be some caps somewhere.
Okay. So, you know, probably, you know, just check the caps in the horizontal section of the monitor or just do a full cap kit.
So how
right,
and
it could be a power cap if it's, you might try the big filter cap in the power supply. They will give horizontal problems, but it's definitely going to be a cap problem.
Okay, sounds good. Tim, you have anything to expound on that?
No, sounds great.
Okay.
It's a cap issue, I bet.
Kyle, check out our video with Michael and Tim talking about installing a cap kit. Check that out, and they can help you as far as getting all that installed. You know, you will have to identify what monitor you have, and the post that we have on the website should help you out with that. But if you have any questions or anything, don't hesitate to send us in our email or leave us in our comments. So. Okay, now we're going to move on to Carrie, and she says, we have an old original Ms. Pac-Man.
Hey, does that make me old?
Apparently you're old and original. I don't know.
I'm older than Ms. Pac-Man.
There you go. So, but yeah, you're the old original Mr.
Scary.
Arcade Repair
Appreciate
Tips,
it.
I think. So, but it says that we have an old original Ms. Pac-Man. The monitor is this color down the middle. We have adjusted the colors and as suggested in your video. Someone told us that we need to find a handheld diffusing coil to run over the top of the screen. Does this sound familiar/right? If so, where can I get one? Well, you know, we've been meaning to actually shoot a video on this for a while, and, you know, I think that both Tim and Michael can kind of expound upon what is a handheld degaussing coil. Michael, what is that?
Every TV monitor, they'll have a degaussing built in, but a lot of times it's not strong enough to actually degauss the monitor, and the handheld one is it's just a magnetic coil that you plug in and you run it over and it'll degauss the screen. She's saying it's discolored. Usually when it needs to be degaussed, you'll have weird colors like purple or, you know, or bright colors. If the picture looks right, it's just the colors are discolored, it's probably going to be a cap problem.
Okay, well, she's saying discolored down the middle. So that, I mean, that makes me think that the colors maybe on the sides are okay, but there's just a middle issue that's
right.
Having the problem.
If it was a degaussing issue, correct me if I'm wrong here, Michael, it would have more problems in the corners or the
usually.
Outside, not the middle.
Right.
Yeah, but everybody out there, check your – we need to shoot a – you guys need to have degaussing coils. We use them a lot, so.
Yeah, Tim actually made a homemade one at some point. We have it in the toolbox that we keep, but the best ones you can buy – from like Cap Controls and some of the other places.
About $30 for a decent one.
Yeah, and that will do pretty much any monitor you put it up against. So still a handy thing to have, but probably not your problem in this case, Carrie. So
I believe it's going to be more of a Cap problem. Tim, I think I'm not mistaken, we did a Ms. Pac-Man one time that had the colors were discolored in the middle, and it was we fixed it with caps.
Yeah, sure did. And it's funny you say down the middle because that kind of falls into the vertical section, but it actually was kind of the middle of the chassis caps. Is that correct? They kind of were in the middle.
Right.
So, and I mean, just kind of taking a stab at this, she's got an original Ms. Pac-Man, probably has the original monitor in it. Any guesses to what that monitor might be, Tim?
Oh, it's probably that same G07 that guy was working on. Maybe a 4600, could be a 4900. There's them three.
Now, when you say 46 or 49, that Wells Garner is what we're talking about there?
Yeah. Send me a picture, Carrie, and I'll tell you what kind of cap kit you can get. Or, Jonathan, that's Michael's area. You know, we're always willing to take those and fix those.
Sure. And yeah, so
another thing to look at is if it is the original monitor, you know, when the game is off, if it has a lot of burn-in, or if it's a real dark brown color, it might just need a new tube. I mean, that's just, you know, it might be the actual tube discoloring the the colors also. So.
Sure. Yeah, and that's a good thought,
it's
Michael.
Possible.
Yeah.
Send us a picture, Carrie. Let us look at it.
Yeah, it sounds good to me. So, Carrie, I think at least we've given you a couple of things. I think we've eliminated at least the degaussing coil part of it. But, you know, it might be good to do a cap kit on that one as well. And if you need some help identifying your monitor, let us know. So now we're going to move on to our final question of the night, and this comes from Nathan McSwain. Nathan says, hi, I have a quick question that I was wondering if you could help me with. I have an off-road challenge machine, and the problem I am having with it is it keeps resetting itself. Sometimes it will play for half an hour and then reset itself, while others, it will do it just past the opening screen. I was wondering if you've had any suggestions to what may be causing the problem. Also, I think you guys are doing a great job with the videos and the repair tips. I was recently given the duty of fixing the arcade games, which there are plenty in need of fixing, and your site is the only reason why I'm kind of making progress. Thanks very much. Well, Nathan, we appreciate all of the support, obviously, from all you guys who watch the videos. But you know, Tim, I'm having a resetting problem. I mean, what usually causes a just general resetting problem in any arcade game?
Boy, skee-ball lanes come to mind right now. Anytime. The first thing I always check if a game starts to reset is the power. You want to make sure that voltage is correct. We're talking about the 5 volts and the 12 volts. So, you know, I can tell you that, you know, lots of times. I mean, yeah, some things on the board it could be and stuff, but 9 out of 10 times game's resetting, you got voltage issues. Now, it could be that you're getting a spike from the wall or something occasionally. Like when your air conditioner kicks on. You guys have been in my shop and the lights dim for just a second. I've seen a game reset like that before. So, you know, everybody out there, if you got a game you take a lot of pride in, I highly recommend that everybody put their games on surge protectors. I don't know where Nathan's from, but we get about 10 power surges a day in Texas, it seems like. Some days more than others. What about you, Michael?
Yeah, Tim, I agree 100%.
Yeah, I guess can't tell you how many times the voltage will do that and a game will reset. We have a cruise in USA at work, and man, it's picky like that. And you can tell sometimes the lights a flicker or whatever, and there it goes, resetting. Put it on a surge protector. And guys, when we're talking about a surge protector, we're not talking about just a power strip like you buy for $5 at Walmart. That's, you know, that'll extend, get you 4 or 5 things plugged into it. But we're a true surge protector. You know, you need to go to Best Buy. You don't need a $100 one, but, you know, maybe around $20 or something. If you're spending less than $20, you're probably not getting much as far as surge protection.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Tim and Michael. Maybe what we'll do is for this podcast, we'll go ahead and we'll put maybe a link to one on Amazon or something like that you guys recommend, so that way we can make sure that we get one that's good for basically all arcade games. So, yeah, great point. But in his case, I think we're really looking at a power supply issue. Definitely needs to check that power supply, make sure that the voltages are correct, right?
I mean, just, you know, if you're supposed to, we talk about within range on a 5-volt game or where you should be reading 5 volts. I mean, if you're over 5% tolerance, in other words, 5.05 or 4.95, I would never be below 5, but anything even over, a lot of times I'll notice that when it's resetting, you'll have too much power going to it sometimes, and it's not always under, so get that thing as close to 5 volts. And have you ever noticed, Sean, that sometimes when you change the 5, you can't quite get the 12? And Michael, we've learned that 5 volts is usually more important to get closer, right on the money if possible.
Right.
Yeah. And I'll second that too. I think we both will. I definitely want to get that 5 volts right on there if you can. So, Michael, you have anything to add for Nathan? Any other thoughts about the resetting issue here?
I'd agree. I'd say 95% that it's probably a power issue. Those power supplies are pretty cheap. I'd probably just buy a new one.
Yeah, and I think that's a great idea. You know, the new ones, especially with that digital readout, is good.
Is, you know, look and see if the game does it more often when it's cold or when it's hot. It could be just a loose solder connection, either, you know, where the, if it, you know, on the board somewhere, and they're usually easy to spot. Just look at the board over real well, because if it's a loose solder connection, it will cause that same problem also. But I definitely start with a power supply.
And, you know, we talked about cleaning the pins where the jammer harness plugs in a lot of times, or any harness for that matter, you know, with the pencil eraser and all that kind of stuff. Anything's not – what's happening is, for some reason, he's losing a connection.
Right.
That, or power at that second. So it could be wiring, could be the connectors right there, or power supply is dropping or raised up to too high or low. Usually
I worked on one
not
too long ago, Tim, that jammer connection actually burnt, I guess, from a loose connection. Mm-hmm. And you just build that up a little bit with solder, and – that
right.
fixed the problem.
Usually
so
that
could be an issue.
That 5-volt area a lot of times will have a little burned area. Or...
Yeah, I think we've got some pole position boards from back in the day that had a lot of burnt areas around that area. Yeah, so that's right around that power, those power pins on the board. So, yeah, definitely something to check out there too. But, Nathan, we hope that gives you at least some idea again of where to start, and, you know, keep us posted like everybody else. So, well, that actually does it for all our questions. But, you know, I might do a little thing here where, maybe Tim and Michael can just on the spot here give us maybe a tip of the week, something that they've come across that might help you in refixing your games. I'll start with Tim here. Tim, you got, like, a tip of the week, maybe something you can share with our listeners?
Well, I just want to encourage everybody to keep asking questions. So there's no dumb ones, you know. I'm calling up the manufacturers and things I work on. Now I'm trying to get a little new school, Michael. I've worked on that DLP lamp this week. So, things are evolving and changing, but the basic principles are the same. Always start with your power. Make sure that your ground plug is good. Make sure your game is grounded. I don't think sometimes we stress that enough. Check your fuses. Check your fuse holders. So always start simple. Start making sure that your power, no matter what's wrong with your game, check. When Jerry would PM our games, he would check the voltage all the time to make sure that even if the game was working, he checked the voltage to make sure it's in line. So that's my tip of the week. Check your voltage whether you think you need to or not, or even if your game is working. You guys are out there in the shop fooling around. Check your 5 volts, 12 volts. You need to know how to do that.
Yeah, and I think we go by the KISS philosophy when we work on arcade games. You know, keep it simple, stupid. You know, I mean, that's pretty much our philosophy anytime. And I think that's Tim's tip is just, start simple. You know, start where the power comes in from the wall and just work your way on up through the game to see if you can't find the problem. So what about you, Michael? You got anything that you've come across that might help our listeners out as far as fixing some games?
Well, just kind of in the same lines as Tim, you know, power supplies they're high stressed. And that's probably going to be one of the major failures in a game. You know, don't look at the game as a whole. Just kind of look and see where what kind of problem you have and go from there. And it'll be a lot more simple. And most of the parts to fix these games are under $10. So, you know, just take your time and you can probably get it fixed real cheap. And, you know, again, if you have any questions, you know, I'm more than free to help anybody. So.
Sure. And, let's talk about that. If you guys want to send in some questions, we have a variety of ways that you can do it. Of course, you can always Twitter us at twitter.com/arcaderepair, and you can just send us a Twitter via that. You can also check us out on our Facebook page, and we have a new email address that I think we're going to set up to where it goes to meet him and perhaps Michael and El Presidente Jerry as well. That's questions@arcaderepairtips.com. Again, that's questions@arcaderepairtips.com, and we'll get one of our somewhat competent staff to help you out and see if we can't get some of this stuff resolved. Or you can always call us on our voicemail line. That's of course, 972-8 AR-TIPS, as in Arcade Repair Tips, or 972-827-8477. And you can always get a hold of us there. You know, leave us a voicemail. We'll play you on the podcast. Or we might even call you back. Ask Arthur. We called him back.
Yeah, one thing that we like is success stories, too. You guys, you know, if you do something and it works, let us know. Post a picture or send us a voicemail. Say, hey, you know, I got it fixed.
Yeah, we always like to hear if you fixed it. I mean, and, you know, it also gives everybody who's listening out there the opportunity to hear, you know, what you did to fix the game that you'd fixed. So, you know, definitely, you know, if you guys fix something, let us know.
We need tips, too.
And that's right. You know, and me and Tim will sit here all day long, and we'll answer your questions, but we'll even tell you straight up we don't know everything, and we're not trying to be the most technical guys out here. We're just trying to help you guys and try to present it in a plain, straightforward manner. Michael, do you have anything before we head out here and close up the podcast?
No, I believe so. Like I said, if anybody has any questions for me, I'd be more than happy to help anybody. Yes. And I learn every day, so.
Yeah. Michael, why don't, you know, you're on here, you're on the podcast and everything. Why don't you go ahead and plug your shop and the name of it and your website and everything? That way we can get it out to the people in case they're interested in maybe getting something besides an arcade game repaired or like a TV or something like that. What's your store and your website there?
It's Affordable Electronic Repair, and it's in Sulphur Springs, Texas. The website is tvrepaironline.com.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll get a full website up there soon, but I believe it does have at least an email link up there right now to where you can email Michael if you guys have any questions specifically for him.
Right. Just to plug, Michael's expertise is in TV repairs, guys, so I know for a fact that it's about that time. A lot of those plasmas and LCDs we all bought a few years ago already starting to go out, and Michael will be glad to help you with that kind of stuff too. Very competent in those areas. We thank you, Michael, for all your help.
Yeah, thank you for joining us this week, too, and giving your opinions on all of our problems here.
Thanks for having me, and anytime you need me, I'm here.
Okay, well, sounds good. Well, Tim, do you have anything before we close out here on the podcast?
No, it's been a great week. Thanks, everybody.
Okay, well, I guess we're going to close up shop here. So, you know, thank you, Michael. Thank you, Tim, for joining us today and for answering the questions for the people. I think everybody's real happy. And you know, and like I said, let us know if you guys have any other questions or if you guys get your stuff fixed. And keep us updated with the questions that we got from this week. So, again, if you want to contact us, questions at arcaderepairtips.com, or you can call us on our voicemail line, 972-8-AR-TIPS is an Arcade Repair Tips. So until next time, you guys have a great night, and we'll talk to you on episode 5.